Hey guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. If you're betting the NFL playoffs, you need to be listening to Cash the Ticket. We're breaking down every single game, totals and sides, all the way to the big game. Subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Broadcasting from the WEEI studios, powered by Verizon. 93.7 WEEI-FM and HD1, Lawrence, Boston. An Odyssey Sports Station.
There's a pitch. Fastball is by him as Pivetta screams at Chisholm as he walks off the mound. Nick Pivetta is fired up. 95-mile-an-hour four-seamer. Now it's a little chatter back and forth as Nick walks off that mound. He is feeling it here. No hits through six for Nick Pivetta.
More Boston sports. It's the Christian Arcan Show on WEEI.
As we cruise into the 8 o'clock hour, it is the Christian Arcan Show here, WEEI. Nice to have you with us here tonight on the 30th of January. If you missed any part of the show or you missed what salad it is that Tommy Freeze Pops lost all that weight eating, you can go back and check on the podcast anytime. Just subscribe to the Christian Arcan Show on the Odyssey app or wherever it is that you find your podcast. Also, you can stream the show or listen on demand anytime. Get that app, will you? And you can listen to WEEI on your smart speaker as well. Just say play 93.7 WEEI. Nick Pivetta highlight there. Was that from last year? Did he strike out Chisholm on the Yankees? Or was that when Chisholm was on the Marlins?
That was from July 4th last year when Chisholm was on the Marlins.
He was still on the Marlins. All right. And I guess he went six hitless innings there. Or scoreless innings. I don't remember exactly how that ended. But Pivetta had a pretty good year for the Red Sox. He was a pretty good soldier there. There was that one time they sent him to the bullpen and he threw a little tantrum, but for the most part, he's been a relatively productive pitcher, not someone that you'd go above and beyond to try and keep in town, which I think is what ended up happening this season. But there may be a reunion on the horizon with the Red Sox and Nick Pivetta. I'm reading from Nesson. Nick Pivetta already turned down the Red Sox this offseason, but there's a chance his Boston tenure could continue. Craig Breslow and company, after the season, extended a qualifying offer to Pivetta, who could have landed a one-year $21.05 million contract for the season if he accepted, but he rejected the offer and declared he was looking for a long-term deal in free agency. Well, with only a few weeks away from pitchers and catchers reporting, Pivetta doesn't have a favorable market. Could that mean that the 31-year-old swallows his pride and comes back to Boston? Jen McCaffrey addressed the hypothetical in a mailbag column today, and McCaffrey wrote this: I can't see Pivetta signing on a short-term deal as a reliever coming off his best year as a starter. Both he and the Red Sox expressed interest in a reunion, and maybe he gets desperate, but I can't see him making that move. I think it's more likely he waits things out. Some team will inevitably have an injury in spring training or early in the season, and then he'll sign with them. While he was good for part of the season in the bullpen in 2023, I'm not sure he'd be the closer with Aroldis Chapman and Liam Hendricks, the likelier options in the mix. Pivetta's quiet market probably has to do with the ramifications of the qualifying offer. The Red Sox made the offer. Any team that signs him would have to fork over draft compensation to the Red Sox. However, that penalty will be removed in early June, so maybe Pivetta stays patient as he seeks out a new contract. That being said, if they get Nick Pivetta as a bullpen arm, I don't think that's the end of the world. You can, if a starter gets hurt, he can slot right in there. But I am disappointed that it's come to this with the Red Sox for a number of reasons. The main ones being, these pitchers all left their team they were on last year in free agency and then went to a new team. There was Nathan Eovaldi, who was with Texas and then re-signed with Texas, but all the rest of these guys that I'm about to list for you were on one team in 2024 and signed with a new team this offseason. Max Fried went from the Braves to the Yankees. Corbin Burns went from the Orioles to the Diamondbacks. Blake Snell, Giants to the Dodgers. Sean Manaea stayed with the Mets, so he doesn't count. Luis Severino, Mets to the Oakland Athletics. Yusei Kikuchi went from the Houston Astros to the LA Angels. Frankie Montes went from Milwaukee to the Mets. Matt Boyd, Cleveland to Chicago. And Walker Buehler went from the Dodgers to the Red Sox. And I just included him in there because I wanted to have sort of a cutoff of where I think these names start to take a turn. It's really after those top five or so, right? Fried, Burns, Snell, Severino. I'd say those were the main four guys right there. They end up going to the Yankees, the Dodgers, the A's, and the Diamondbacks. The guy I wanted the most was Corbin Burns. And I don't remember the Red Sox really ever being that far into the mix with him. There wasn't a lot of reporting connecting those two. And there's always reporting with the Red Sox being interested in everybody. I mean, that's what they do. You put a guy out there, a guy that they could use, you'll find out that they're interested, you'll find out that they checked in, you won't find out anything else. I think there may have been a report of them checking in on Burns, but that's it. And this guy was the prize. I mean, he was the prize of this free agent class of starting pitchers. I think he's better than Freed. I think he's better than Snell. I think he's better than Eovaldi, better than Manaea, better than Montas, better than all those guys. Frankie Montas kind of sucks. Kikuchi was good with the Blue Jays. He fell off in Houston last year. He's probably going to suck with the Angels. Severino, I still think, has something left in the tank. The Oakland A's end up going out there and not breaking the bank, but spending a lot of money for them, certainly. $23 million a year was around there, $22.3 million. For the Oakland A, I mean, that's significant for them. And Blake Snell gobbled up by the Dodgers just like everybody else. Max Fried going to the Yankees after they lost out on Juan Soto. Pivot right to him, go out there, get their man, bam. Disappointing that the Red Sox continue to do business this way, isn't it? I find it disappointing. Especially since it seems like the Red Sox are kind of all done dealing right now. Sort of seems like they've hit their limit. And there may be some, McCaffrey mentioned there, there may be some moves coming down the pipe at some point as the spring training month goes by, and if there's injuries or whatever. I mean, there's plenty of guys still out there. You know, I was just telling you the guys who had signed. There's still plenty of guys who are available. Patrick Corbin's still available. Charlie Morton, Jack Flaherty, Jose Quintana, Andrew Haney, Pivetta, you know, he's still out there. James Paxton's still out there. There's names, all right? Like, you don't love it. Charlie Morton's 42 years old. I mean, there's not a lot of great names there still available, just like there's not a lot of great right-handed bats that are out there still available either. But there's still guys if you wanted to go out there and make a move. And I'm not necessarily sure the Red Sox even need to pull the trigger on another starter. But if they're thinking about bringing Pivetta back in, you do kind of have to wonder, like, okay, well, was this the plan all along? Just lowball Pivetta, hope there's no market, and then snatch him back up? Because I was kind of hoping that they'd be thinking a little bit bigger. And Garrett Crochet is bigger, in fairness. And that was a good trade.
But again, that was a trade.
It was a trade.
Spend a bunch of money to get him.
Exactly, Brian. Exactly. You have money. You've got, I think, $40 million to go, $30 million to go before you hit that CBT tax. You got space. You got room. You're able to do this without getting nailed with a bunch of, with a bunch of tax problems.
I believe the Angels and A's have both spent more money this offseason than the Red Sox.
That's pathetic. I mean, that's honestly pathetic. And there's no reason for it. There were guys out there you should have been active in pursuing. There's guys out there you should have landed. When you lost out on Juan Soto, you should have pivoted to somebody else. Not Aroldis Chapman or anybody, you know, like an actual frontline player that you could have afforded and that you could have gone out there and signed if you wanted to, if you had the gumption, which for some reason they just don't anymore. Should we take a look at the roster right now, assuming that this thing is all done, that this is who we're dealing with, that this is who we have? Your rotation right now. Garrett Crochet, your ace. Tanner Houck, Brian Baio, Walker Buehler, Cutter Crawford. I like the top of that rotation. I like Crochet and Houck. I like Baio as a third. Buehler, I don't know what to expect from him, and Cutter Crawford, I think, is very underrated. I like him at the back end of the rotation. Rotation, no real complaints. You could have brought in another starter if you wanted to, but I think that's a solid rotation right there. I feel pretty good about it. Your bullpen consists of Liam Hendricks / Aroldis Chapman as your closer. Don't really love that situation. I'd prefer Garrett Whitlock closing. We'll see. Maybe he could end up winning that job. I know he's still coming back from his injury. Also, Brendan Bernardino, Josh Winkowski, Justin Slayton, Luis Guerrero, and Greg Weissert. I don't really feel like they fixed the bullpen. I don't think it's terrible, but I don't think if that was one of their big things, we're going to go out this year and fix the bullpen. Chapman, I'm sorry, that's not enough for me. I'm still annoyed that they traded away my guy there. I'm still annoyed they traded away Boozer. Boozer had a better year as a power lefty. He had a better year last year than Chapman. He's 4 years younger. I'm annoyed that they did that. And here's your lineup. Your catchers are Connor Wong and Carlos Narvaez. Your first baseman's Tristan Casas. Your second baseman is some mixture of David Hamilton, maybe Christian Campbell, Vaughn Grissom, and Sedan Rafaela. I think Nick Sogard's still in the mix somewhere. Third base, Devers. Shortstop, I believe, is going to be Trevor Story to start the year. But then you throw in Rafaela and Hamilton and, like, Romy Gonzalez, I think, is still around, some of those guys. Your outfield consists of Jaron Duran, Sedan Rafaela, and Willier Abreu. Rafaela moving all around like he did last year, I would imagine. Masataka Yoshida is a guy who may get some looks in the outfield there as they try and pump up his trade value. And Rob Refsnyder, obviously, your lone remaining right-handed power bat, is the only guy you have left. He's like your fifth outfielder. And then your DH is Yoshida. And that's what you got.
Doesn't feel like they got much better from last year to this year.
It really doesn't. It really doesn't. It feels like they're expecting a lot of things to repeat, like Jaron Duran to continue to tear the cover off the ball like he did. And I hope he does. I mean, really, I hope he does. It's going to be hard to do that. Rafaela and Abreu. I thought we might upgrade a little bit from that, and we may see Roman Anthony come in and be the guy this year. I don't know. I mean, that's entirely possible, too. Your infield situation is still tenuous up the middle with Hamilton and Story. That may change with Christian Campbell. Again, we'll have to wait and see. And Tristan Cass's whole full season of him, I think, would be a nice difference. But really, you lost a big part of your offense in Tyler O'Neill, and you never replaced them. And that's troubling. That's a troubling detail here with this offseason that the Red Sox really have no excuse for. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. Mad Dog Russo today was talking about tortured fan bases on ESPN. And it got Brian thinking and then me thinking about which fan base here in Boston is the most tortured. Are any of them tortured? Would you describe any of them that way? I would, for one of them. I'll tell you which one it is, and I have some leftover Red Sox thoughts along with this Fenway real estate project. I have some thoughts on how all of that may be affecting the decision-making going on with the Fenway Sports Group. I'll get to that with your phone calls right after Brian gets you caught up on what's trending.
The exclusive home for Patriots Monday and Friday.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
Well, the Boston Bruins and Winnipeg Jets are now into the second period of this one. Bruins trail 2-1. They were down 2-0. Brad Marchand scored at the end of the first period on a power play goal. Speaking of the Bruins, reports have surfaced that former Bruins captain Zdeno Chara is set to join the Bruins as a front office consultant, as well as a mentor to Bruins players. Following their 22-point win over the Bulls last night, the Celtics will hit the road to play the Pelicans in New Orleans tomorrow night. Tip-off scheduled for 8 o'clock. Porzingis spoke post-game yesterday on the development of his shot.
Yeah, no, a lot. You can see the percentage. You know, it's night and day. So I just know I have to stay on top of this, and these are, I have to enjoy these moments. These are nice moments when you get on a few games. You feel good, rhythm is good, shots falling. You know, I'm enjoying it.
The Green Bay Packers are set to hire former Patriots defensive coordinator DeMarcus Covington as their new defensive line coach. Big news in the NBA today is current Heat and former Celtic guard Terry Rozier is under investigation by federal prosecutors for potentially cooperating in an illegal sports betting scheme back in 2023 while he was a member of the Charlotte Hornets organization. It included unusual prop betting activity from Rozier. And in a story from the Baltimore Banner today, Baltimore Ravens kicker Justin Tucker was accused of inappropriate sexual behavior by 6 massage therapists. Justin Tucker has since released a statement claiming that these allegations are unequivocally false. I'm Brian Frazoco. That's what's trending on WEI and on WEI.com. More of the Christian Arcan Show coming up after this.
The Greg Hill Show.
Chime, you didn't ask him about your lead this morning.
Oh, yeah. Mike, the Utah Hockey Club's final list of names came out, and it's down to Utah Hockey Club, Utah Mammoth, and the Utah Wasatch. Do you have a
feel on
any of
this? Flying fart about that.
Perfect. That's kind of what I expected.
Did you miss something? Listen to the podcast on the Odyssey app or at WEEI.com. The Greg Hill Show, morning 6 to 10 on New England Sports Original. WEEI. WEEI. We are right back to it. It's Christian Arcand on WEEI.
That is 8 games that they have lost, where if they would have won any of them, they may have won the whole thing. So to me, they're the number one tortured fan base in America. I don't want to hear about the Cowboys. They've got 5 championships. Bears, the Jets, Minnesota, Cleveland, and Buffalo. I don't even think you can debate it. Those are the 5 worst franchises.
I've been next to you all night and still don't know what you're about. You keep talking, but not much coming out your mouth. Can't you tell that I want you? I
that was Mad Dog Russo. In case you didn't know. Very subtle. Just know me, yeah.
You barely even know it's Mad Dog when he's talking.
The most tortured fan base in the history of the world.
Got me thinking about which fan base in Boston. Now, I know everybody's fans of everybody here, but I'm just talking about individual, like which teams. I think there's Patriots fans maybe who aren't big hockey fans and so forth. Some people just don't care about certain sports. Like that's, you know, it's fine. But I just mean individually each team. You root for a team. We're all part of the same fan base of Boston sports. But each individual team, which one's the most tortured? Which one tortures the fans the most? And I was thinking about it because right now it's a pretty good, there's some good contenders. It's pretty solid right now. I think you can eliminate the Celtics. The Celtics are not doing that at all. The Celtics are catering to their fans in a way that no other team, now the other three teams combined couldn't dream of with the way that they spent and the way that they put that team together and then kept that team together. It did prompt the old man to sell the team, which I guess could be considered torturous on some level, but I guess we'll see. We have to see who buys the team. Right now, Celtics fans got it pretty good. So I think they can be eliminated. They'd be way down at the bottom. Fourth out of four, for sure. But between the Boston Red Sox, the New England Patriots, and the Boston Bruins, you can make three pretty good arguments right now. And I'm talking about right now, not like historically most tortured. Right now. But you do have to look at the history a little bit because you can't just get tortured after 1 year. It has to be a buildup over time of torture. And the Patriots don't quite hit that yet. We're only 5 years removed from Tom Brady. You can't call that the 5 years torture, especially when one of them was a playoff run with a rookie quarterback. Everybody was very excited after that. People have short memories. But after that 2021 season, people were talking about Bill Belichick and Mac Jones like they were about to take over the freaking league.
Didn't Ryan Clark compare Belichick to God that playoff run?
He did. Everyone said Bill's got his groove back. Bill's the man. He just took this rookie and had a playoff run with him. That was that year where they had the game in Buffalo with the wind where they ran it a million times and didn't let Mac throw, and everyone talked about what a genius Belichick was for doing that. Little did we know it was the first step in a total meltdown for Mac Jones, which never really got any better. But regardless, after that season, even though they got the crap kicked out of them by Buffalo, people were high on the Patriots. So it's been bad since then, in the 2-3 years since then, for sure. But not enough to call it torture. And I kind of feel the same way about the Red Sox. Red Sox fans right now, I think, feel pretty tortured. But we are 6 years removed from the greatest Boston Red Sox team that ever existed. I mean, really, like the 2018 team, by almost every demonstrable metric, was the best Red Sox team ever in the history of the Boston Red Sox, which for you historians out there, that history goes back a ways, all right? I mean, it goes back to the 19th century, basically. We're talking about a long, long time. That was the best Boston Red Sox team, Boston baseball team, ever. Ever. So it's hard to call them tortured. You also had an ALCS run a couple years back there, too. Right around the same time as the Mac Jones season, as a matter of fact. Seemed like things were pretty good for both those teams in 2021, didn't it? We're coming out of COVID. Red Sox are in the ALCS. Patriots and their rookie quarterback are making the playoffs. And now here we are in 2025, and it's like, ugh. Not quite the trajectory we were expecting with either of those two clubs. I think the answer here is the Bruins, who, by the way, right now trail Winnipeg 2-1 midway through the second period. We'll talk more about that game after it's over because, you know, counter-programming and everything. And I don't want to talk too much Bruins here, but I think they're the answer to this question.
I don't even think you can debate it.
You cannot make the debate. Sorry, debating Manning. You cannot debate this.
How do you feel about that commercial, by the way? I know you hated the Peyton Manning one.
Peyton Manning?
I know you hated that one.
Here's my power rankings for the Peyton Manning, those new Peyton Manning commercials. The worst one by far is Calculating Manning. That one's
dumb.
That one's so stupid. I'm also Calculating Manning, and then he calculates stuff, and it's like, shut up.
It doesn't even rhyme.
It doesn't. It's not even, you're right. It doesn't calculate, and it's like, shut up. Then, Peyton Manning is number two. Because the first time I saw Peyton Manning, I thought it was funny. And then I just wanted to kill myself every time I saw the commercial after that. Did you say Peyton or Peyton? Peyton. 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 Shut up. Debating Manning, legitimately funny. The debating Manning one is actually fine. I'm not even sick of it. When he hits the girl with that's debatable, like, very, very good. Great comedic timing. Peyton Manning's always had that. That was the best use of Peyton Manning in a commercial out of the three of them, by far. So that's it. Number one with a bullet is debating Manning. Way far down is Peyton Manning. And then way far down from that is calculating Manning. Those are my Peyton Manning All-State power rankings of those new commercials. Debating Manning is funny. I stand by that. I'll give credit where it's due. And that was the last one to come out. Like, Peyton Manning was the first one. Then Calculating Manning was after that. And I was like, these commercials suck. Whoever's writing these, they need to get rid of this guy or girl or whoever. And then Debating Manning came and saved it.
I don't even think he can debate it.
Thank you, Mad Dog. So that's how I rank those. But I think the Bruins are the most tortured fan base out of all the teams in Boston right now. Think about it. Their Stanley Cup was almost 15 years ago now. They've had incredible regular seasons and spectacular flameouts. And they've also basically rubber stamped the idea that so long as you make it to the playoffs, that's okay. That's all you really need. That's all we're shooting for. That's enough to keep us happy. You keep that building lit up for another couple of weeks at the end of the season, you know, that's fine. That's all we need. We sell a little bit more, a few more sweaters, a few more hot dogs, a few more kegs. And we're happy over here in Delaware North, which is not even in Delaware. It's like in Buffalo, right? But whatever. We're happy here. You know, that's fine. You just keep on doing what you're doing. They basically rubber stamped that as the standard, as the bar. And the result has been to be expected when that's what your owners have told you is the definition of success, you know? So now more so than before, because at the very least, I mean, the Bruins were an enjoyable product for the regular season going back a few years now. This year, they're not even that. So the torture was usually something that would be dragged out over the course of a really promising regular season. And then they just crush your dreams at the end of it.
They would tease you all regular season and finally have you believing, well, maybe this year's different. Well, maybe this year's different.
Right. Now it's like slow. Now it's like water torture. You know what I mean? Like, now it's like, I don't know if you're allowed to say Chinese water torture, but like when they just drop the water on your head until you go crazy. Like, that's what this season's like for the Bruins. It's been like Chinese water torture, which, again, sorry if that's not okay to say, but that's what it makes me think of. Whatever nationality happens to be dropping the water, like that's what I think of. Speaking of things that I'm thinking of, the Boston Red Sox, not the most tortured fan base, but making a push. Okay, right now making a push with their ownership group, especially considering what we just talked about, which is the fact that it appears that they're done with their offseason, which I'm not happy about. I don't think it was a terrible offseason. I like Garrett Crochet, but I don't really like too many of the other moves that they made. And I think that they're still being hamstrung by a reluctancy on the a part of ownership to go out and spend any money, even if it means you're very far away from this CBT tax, which is pathetic. I hear Hal Steinbrenner the other day. We talked about this yesterday. Hal Steinbrenner and the Ricketts, Tom Ricketts, crying about the big bad Dodgers, the Guggenheim people, and how they're out there spending and how it's so hard to compete with them. A Steinbrenner complaining like that. I've seen everything now. Ugh. I mean, that made me sick. At least John Henry has the pride to not go on the TV or talk to a reporter and cry about the big bad Dodgers. I mean, he's not doing anything about it. He's just sort of getting his ass kicked in all these negotiations and missing out on all these players and not really seeming to care that much. But at least he's not crying to the media about the big bad Dodgers and how they're just so rich and they're spending so much money and there's no way that a team like the Yankees could ever compete with them. Like, ugh. Ugh, that make my skin crawl reading that. The Red Sox, as we know, and Fenway Sports Group, I should say, as we know, have big plans for the area around Fenway Park. They have a big real estate development project that I believe they're going to get started on, or I think they're looking to get started on soon. And I was thinking about the area around Fenway and all the changes that have been made to it lately. And I'm not just talking about, you know, baseball tavern closing, which, God, do I miss that place. Oh, I miss that place so much. I also miss, Copperfields. Copperfields, I miss a lot. I know it's something else now. Copperfields has been gone for a long time. It turned into that place where the girls wear the kilts, you know what I'm talking about? The tilted kilt, the Scottish place. They're all dressed up in like Scottish, it's like Scottish Hooters kind of. You don't know what I'm talking about?
No idea.
There was a thing called...
Sounds like I need to try it out, though.
I think they're gone. I think they all closed. But for a while, the tilted kilt was a thing. I think there's still one in New Hampshire, maybe, but like the one by Fenway closed, and now it is Fenway Johnny's, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that Fenway Johnny's is in the site of the former Tilted Kilt and formerly Copperfields, and I think Fenway Johnny's is great. One of the few, other than the Cask, really, baseball bars around there. And that's sort of the thing, is like when Baseball Tavern closed, Remy's closed, Copperfield's closed, over on the other side of Kenmore Square there was, not the Hawthorne, that place closed in the hotel too, but there was another bar over there, it's a dive bar, I think is actually still open, but, you know, Eastern Standard closed, that Uno's closed, the Popeye's closed, like everything around there, it seemed like, either turned over or just closed. I mean, it's, you know, it's downtown Boston, so rent's going to be high for a lot of these places. But I all thought they were places that were doing well. And with the rent getting jacked up so much like that, it seems strange that now here comes John Henry and these people coming in here to make some real estate deals. You know, like that. And I hope it's good. I hope it ends up being a good thing. Because it's much better around Fenway when there's a lot of different places to go and, you know, eat and experience. I know Lansdowne Street still has Loretta's Last Call and Bill's Bar and, you know, all these other places down there. You know, they're still going strong. I don't know how they're going in the off season, but I know during the baseball season, you know, around House of Blues and all that, they're still out there doing good business. But a lot of places around there flipped over or went out of business or shut down, like the restaurants up on that street, Tenderoni's closed, Tiger Mama closed. Like, it's a weird sort of time for that area. And it's a weird time, I think, to be investing like that so largely in the local real estate and trying to make it into more, I don't know, I think it's going to be like living units and stuff like that. Residential units is what I meant to say there, not living units. I don't know how much of it's going to be retail and restaurants and bars and things of that nature. But I do wonder if that's part of this holdup. Like yesterday I was talking about the prospects and how the prospects have been used as a crutch and as an excuse for Red Sox and ownership to not spend. Well, we don't want to block this guy. We don't want to block Marcelo Meyer. We don't want to block Roman Anthony. We don't want to do that, so we're not going to sign Teoscar Hernandez. We're not going to sign Alex Bregman. We're not going to do all these things because we have these young players that we're really excited about and we don't want to stunt their growth. Which I think is a terrible excuse. You don't have to stunt anyone's growth. If one of these young kids comes out and outplays Alex Bregman or outplays Teoscar Hernandez, that's a terrific problem to have. It really is. And you can find a way to move on from either the young player or Bregman or Hernandez. I mean, it's not the end of the world. And worst case scenario is that the old guy falls off. You have to pay him out his money and get the rest of that contract going. You can't trade him, and you got to eat a little money. Oh, no. Isn't that the worst thing in the world? Meanwhile, you got this young stud taking his place, and no one's going to care about that. Fans aren't going to care. The only people who are going to care about that is the people with the ledger. And it just seems like that's driving every decision now. Every decision that they make with this team, and that's so disappointing. Now I wonder if this whole thing with the real estate, if that is playing a role in it too. Because it can't be a small project. To get something going like that down there, you got to be really invested. Like, as much as they just did this whole deal with the PGA Tour and, you know, all these things that they're trying to get involved with. They want to have rumors are anyway, not that they're going to be going for the Celtics, but that there will be an expansion team in the NBA and that they're going to want to get in on that. Listen, I mean, you know, I'm not going to sit here and pretend like I can tell them what to do with their business or anything. But it does seem like an odd time to sort of jump into the Fenway real estate market, you know? Like, that's your thing now? You got this team that you're kind of neglecting monetarily, and instead, you're going for that? Like, it's just, I don't know. I don't really get it. And I feel like the team's suffering for it. Whether you want to put it on the prospects and they're leaning on the prospects or other interests that they have on or off the field or on or off the world of sports. I mean, this isn't really even a sports thing. It's mostly just the real estate deal that happens to be near a ballpark that they also own. So it's like, I don't know.
Isn't it the same thing we criticized the Crafts for not spending last offseason when they put in the Lighthouse and the Giants scoreboard?
Yeah, exactly. Same thing. Same kind of thing. 617-779-7937. Let's go to Grant in Waltham. Go ahead, Grant.
Hey, good evening. How are you?
Hi, Grant. What's up?
Hey, how far back do you go with the baseball tavern?
Well, I was born in 82, so that means I turned 21 in 2003. So I'd say in the, you know, the 2000s, the early to mid-2000s is when I started wetting my beak down there. Why?
Well, I'm just dating myself. I first went there in 1985.
Okay. I was 3 years old at the time, so I didn't see you there at that time, Grant.
At the time, they weren't at the big place. They had a small place down the street a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
And it only had one bathroom. So there was no male, no female bathroom. There's one bathroom, and they had a bartender by the name of Freddie. And anyone who's there knows Freddie because they had 50-cent drafts and 75-cent drinks. And you'd be there all night, and you'd ask him how much you owe him, and he'd sort of look up in the sky and go, let's call it $13.25. I'm like, that sounds great.
That does sound great.
And they had a cat. They had a cat mousetrap. And so anyway, thanks for bringing that up. Great memories. Have a great night.
Thank you, Grant. Appreciate that. Yeah, we all got a bartender named Freddie in our lives, don't we? I miss the tavern, man. I miss going up on that roof deck. I vaguely remember it being in another place, but not enough that, like, I went there, I don't think. I could be misremembering, but I don't know. For me, it was a long time ago now. in a very blurry portion of my youth. Anyway, 617-779-7937 is the phone number. Terry Rozier, in trouble with the NBA and with the feds. The NBA actually cleared him. He's not so much in trouble with them now, but they may have to reopen their investigation as the feds are now looking at it. And the last time they looked at something like this, well, the player involved got banned from the game for life. So we'll get into that with your phone calls next.
The dynasty continues!
The exclusive home for Patriots Monday and Friday.
WEEI. New England
Sports Original.
You're listening to Christian Arcan on WEEI.
Suspicious gambling activity surrounding guard Terry Rozier in a game nearly 2 years ago is now being investigated by federal prosecutors as a part of the same probe that led to the lifetime ban of former Raptors player Jontay Porter. Now, at the time, Rozier was playing for the Hornets. The Wall Street Journal, they first reported the investigation, and NBA spokesperson Mike Bass said in a statement, quote, in March 2023, the NBA was alerted to unusual betting activity related to Terry Rozier's performance in a game between Charlotte and New Orleans. The league conducted an investigation and did not find a violation of NBA rules. The league said they are cooperating with the U.S. Attorney's Office's investigation here.
Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the police.
Whoop, whoop.
That's the sound of the beast.
Whoop, whoop.
That's the sound of the police.
Whoop, whoop.
That's the sound of the beast.
I saw KRS-One in concert once, and it was at this small little club in Denver, and he had everybody come up on the stage and sit on the stage. Everybody who was in the club, it was like, I don't know.
How many people were there?
45 people, maybe. Okay. It was a small place. And he had everyone come up on the stage. And I forget why. Maybe it was bad weather or something. It was Denver, so maybe it was like snow that night, and they were expecting more people. It was a small place, but it wasn't that small. But only, you know, a hand, like 50-something people came out. And we all got up, and we sat on the stage, and we sat there, and KRS-One did the whole show right in front of us, right there on the stage. It was cool. I hadn't thought of that in a long time. At any rate, the police may be headed for Terry Rozier's house soon, or the feds anyway. That's what it looks like, as he is now under federal investigation in connection for an illegal betting scheme, as you just heard from Malika Andrews at ESPN there. Federal investigators are looking into unusual betting activity relating to Terry Rozier during his time with the Hornets back in 2023. He left the game in March of that year, less than 10 minutes played against the Pelicans, and received a strong amount of betting interest on his unders for the game. Rozier has not been accused of a crime or of any wrongdoing, according to Wall Street Journal, and at the time, Rozier went down with a foot injury and missed the team's final eight games. Bettors at the time said that there was inside info going around that Rozier would leave the game early. A Twitter poster said, I was in on this today, got lucky that I was fed some inside info that Rozier was leaving in the first or second quarter, depending on game flow and live lines, so that all the unders would hit. The user posted a picture of a bet on Rozier's unders on FanDuel, a $122 bet that won $100 in profit. Not a lot of juice there. Prior to being acquired by the Heat, Rozier averaged 23 points per game with the Hornets, but has fallen dramatically this season to 12 points per game. He's in the third year of a four-year contract. Of course, allusions now are being made to Jonte Porter. Jonte Porter, who played for the Raptors, I want to say?
That's right, Toronto Raptors.
Not a very well-known player, not a guy who got a lot of minutes, but he was banned by the NBA for life after he was found to have limited his participation in games for betting purposes. He pled guilty in July to wire fraud conspiracy. I don't think Terry Rozier is going to be doing that. And also, there's another element to this with the foot thing, with the foot injury, because he missed the rest of the season. So if I'm Rozier's lawyer, and, you know, not that they've consulted me for my advice or anything like that, but that's the thing I would hammer here, right? It had nothing to do with my client. Think about all the people that had information about Rozier's potential foot injury, other than Terry Rozier. That could point to all sorts of different people. That could point to trainers. That could point to assistant coaches. That could point to team doctors. That could point to teammates. Anybody. I mean, really, anybody that knew about his foot problem and then passed it on to somebody who then passed it on to all his, you know, bookie friends or whatever. That's not 100% throwing it on the feet of Terry Rozier. But the fact that the feds are zeroing in on him, the fact that there was a major spike in that betting and that, you know, this whole thing happened after that seems kind of shady. And when Rozier was in college, he was associated with a pretty bad crowd. I don't know if that followed him into the NBA, but I remember coming out of school, that was a knock on him. That was a knock on Rozier, who I thought was a great Celtic. I loved him when he played here. I was sad when he left. I kind of understood it, and I knew that he was unhappy playing with Kyrie, but, like, I missed him. When he left, I was like, oh, man, they're going to miss him. And they haven't really missed him all that much, but still, I liked him as a player. I liked him on the Celtics. I thought he was an exciting young player. And, you know, as his career's gone on, Charlotte was sort of a dead end. Miami's now kind of looking like a dead end, too. We'll see if he has another act left in him. But really, I mean, this whole thing, if he's involved in this, that could be it. That could be it for Terry Rozier. And what a way to go out. I just gave you the details of that contract. It is a four-year, $96 million contract, $96.2 million. He's in the third year of it right now. He has another year to go, $100 million. And I don't know if he gets caught gambling or having shaved points or something like that. I mean, that gets voided. You can't unpay him the money you already paid him. But, like, oof, to lose out on the rest of this year and next year because of this? Because of some dumb gambling thing to help your friends out or whatever it even was. I mean, we'll see. We'll see what this ends up uncovering. But the last time the feds got involved like this, it was with Jonte Porter, and they had him singing like a canary. He pled guilty, and he was done. He was done in the NBA forever. That was it. I hate to see that happen to Terry Rozier. But I'm also surprised this isn't happening way more often. Like, way more often. On the rare occasions that I ever get a tip about anything gambling-wise, and when I say tip, I mean, like, you know, word from training camp or, you know, they were running red zone sets with this particular player. So, you know, if you're thinking about anytime touchdowns, they were trying to do stuff with this guy in practice, heard about that this week, you know, things like that. Intel. Everybody swears they got good intel. And sometimes you get good intel and it doesn't end up making a difference anyway. Like, maybe they were running those red zone sets for the certain player. They try and do it in the game and the guy drops the ball. Like, you never know. Like, intel is sort of what it is. But when it's something like this, when it's something down to the he's going to leave after the first quarter, so bet the unders, that's different. I mean, that's a whole different can of worms.
You can see that they try to cover their steps by him being like, well, I missed the rest of the season anyway, so clearly I was hurt.
Yeah. I mean, true. And that could also point to it being somebody else. I mean, that could point to it being one of the trainers or team doctors or, you know, someone like that. But
I think that's them trying to sell it even more, though.
It could be. And also, why wouldn't they do that with every single player when they get hurt? How come there isn't weird, unusual betting activity anytime a player on the Heat, or I guess the Hornets at the time, was injured or was going to miss some time or whatever? How come they didn't tell everybody to bet all those unders, too? How come it was only Terry Rozier? That's what makes it suspicious. That's why he's getting looked at. The NBA did look at this.
And it's not like Rozier is a player who's bet on all the time. He's not Steph Curry or LeBron James.
No,
like,
but he's Terry in Rozier. I mean, he's in the butt. He's not an end-of-the-bench guy who's not going to show up in the over-unders. Like for
but how often is Terry Rozier bet on?
Not enough.
Probably not often.
Not that much, right. Not that much that when they see a big spike like this, they get suspicious. Now, the NBA investigated this. And very quickly wrapped up their investigation and said, nope, everything's fine here. No, nothing to see here. Terry Rozier, totally, totally innocent. And that's all you need to know about that. And then the feds get involved. And the NBA's like, yeah, we looked into this. But apparently others have decided maybe there's more to see here. But we looked into it. We made our decision. And good luck to you, FBI. hope you find what you're looking for. So there you go. That's the latest news there on Terry Rozier. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. The Patriots Brain Trust out at the Senior Bowl yesterday. Or I guess it was 2 days ago now, back on Tuesday. And we've been hearing things. We've been hearing things about that visit. We've been hearing things about the Patriots and their draft strategy and how they've set up a bit of a scout school. Greg Bedard was talking about that on CLNS Media. We'll get into that, and we'll get into some potential draft scenarios with this team as we move into the 9 o'clock hour. That's all coming up next.
The Christian Arcan Show on WEEI.
WEEI.
WEEI.